It's the Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 210. I am your host, Adam Mangum. In this episode, Greg Rebell, the voice of the Cougars on KSL, comes on to talk about the performance of the football team, including his take from close calls against Missouri and San Jose State. He also talks about the fast starts of Corbin Kafusi and Kyle Davis with the men's basketball team and about the importance of the upcoming game against Belmont. Matt and I then preview Utah State and play America's favorite game, Answering Machine. This week's podcast is sponsored by my upcoming epic fantasy novel, Peak Crosser, the first in a planned trilogy. To learn more about how you can help crowdfund the novel, go to www.adamjmangum.com. This is the Rise and Shout Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @BYU_RiseShout. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/RiseAndShout. And listen to us right now. Welcoming back to the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast, Greg Rebell, the voice of the Cougars on KSL. Greg, welcome back to the podcast.
Adam, thank you. Always good to be with you.
So let's start off, obviously, over the last couple of weeks, BYU football team has had some ups and some downs. Obviously, Fresno State went according to script with them beating the Bulldogs, but the weeks before that, the disappointing loss to Missouri, and then a very close call against San Jose State. Do you think this team offensively, will start there, has righted the ship after some miscues against a very good Missouri defense, but also maybe a mediocre San Jose State defense? Or do you think this is just the up and downs of having an inexperienced quarterback, as well as maybe not as much depth as you would like on the offensive line and other places?
Well, considering how drastically BYU had to kind of change direction once Taysom Hill was knocked out for the season, I think BYU's done okay offensively. I think that Fresno State, while not a very stern test in terms of defensive performance and personnel, allowed BYU to to get back on track a little bit and get some confidence going into Utah State, which I think is as important as anything. I think you look to BYU's third down numbers as kind of a sign that a first year quarterback, as good as Tanner Mangum is and will be, there are certain challenges that you simply have to overcome when it comes to continuity, and a lot of those things show up in third down percentage, which has not been one of Robert and I's best years that way. But they are scoring, generally speaking, enough points to win. And you look back on this season, and if they convert a third down at UCLA and find a way to just avoid a couple of key mistakes at Missouri, it's a BYU team that it could have found itself, with just one loss at this time of the season. And it may not be the kind of team where you say, well, that's a 10-1 team. But the fact is that they got blown out of one game. And that was Michigan. And every other game they've either won or been in until the end. And there's something to be said for that. There have been some teams in which BYU teams that find themselves out of the game, multiple times a year. And this hasn't been one of those years. And so with all the challenges they've had to face with Taysom going out and all the myriad other personnel concerns they've had to deal with, I think BYU's done okay for itself.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the offense, especially with the freshman quarterback, one other high point for the offense has actually been the play of the running backs. In particular, Algie Brown came into the year, I think, when Jamal was not going to be playing. I think a lot of folks, myself included, thought the running game was going to be limited. Then Taysom gets hurt, and I thought, well, I don't know how well we'll run the ball this season, but Algie's averaging 6 yards a carry. He doesn't get hit for a loss very often. What kind of difference has his play made, and what do you think has been the difference between, say, him this year and him in years past?
Well, I don't know that there's a great deal of difference. I kind of think Algie is Algie, and what you've seen historically is what you're getting this year. The running game's been okay. It's still ranked 102nd, I think, nationally in yards per game, and the yards per carry number could be better. It's down at 4.3 yards a carry. That's just okay. And I think one of the problems is the fact that none of these backs have started every game or been available for every game. In fact, you take the top ball carriers on this team, Brown, Hine, Bernard, I guess I'll throw Nate in there too, Carter and Burt. No one's played more than 9 games, and then BYU's played 11. And so you've got a 9-game player, you've got a 7-game player, you've got a 6-game player, another 8 and a 9. The most starts belongs to Algie with 9, but no one else after him is, has really had the kind of either health or carries to make a big difference. Adam Hine has simply not been the same since the first couple 3 weeks of the season. They're bringing him in now and running him some, but I don't think he's going to recover until a bowl game, if that. So the running game's been okay. But there have been better years, and there will be better years. Next year, I think, might be one of the best in recent memory if everyone that's expected to come does come and plays to potential.
Yeah, the offense could have a lot of weapons last year. Let's stick there for just a second. On the wide receiver side, it has been kind of amazing. We talked about this, you and I did this summer when you were on the show, about this could be one of those years where three or four guys get 40 catches and 500 yards, and it's kind of working out that way. Has this played out how you thought, or did you think one of these guys, namely Matthews or Kurtz, would have way more catches than the other guys or way more yards? Or is this kind of what we expected out of a pretty balanced group of wide receivers?
I think it's played pretty close to expectation because the addition of Nick Kurtz was probably going to take away a few balls that might have otherwise gone Mitch Matthews' way, which they did the year before when Kurtz was not available. So I really did see a little more spreading out. Kind of a big five, super six, if you want to include Colby Pearson. Six guys with 20 to 50 catches, and five of those guys between 400 and 600 yards. That's really good balance and makes BYU just that much tougher to defend. When Matt Wells today, talks about BYU's wide receivers, yes, he talks about how big and tall they are, which is clearly a factor, but there's just so many of them to cover right now. And then, when you bring in Moroni Laulupututau, who equals his season catch total just in this last game, you see that BYU is able to go even deeper at wideout. Now you're talking about six, seven, eight guys that are all pretty skilled and can contribute out there. And so it's as good as BYU has been at that position. And with Tanner Mangum, as good as BYU's had as a freshman quarterback, I think the signs are really there that this is going to be a good offense for years to come.
Well, one surprise to the offense, at least over the last few games, has been the play of Remington Peck moving over from defensive line. I sat in the stands and but in front of some Missouri fans who kept asking, why are we leaving that guy so open in his couple of catches against the Tigers? This has kind of been a pleasant surprise. Is this a surprise to the coaching staff and to those of you that have watched in practice, or is this, after he made the transition, just something that, as a good athlete, he would catch up to?
Well, he was a really good high school pass catcher, but it wasn't until this August that he approached the coaches with the serious notion of maybe this is where I'd be best this senior year, is as a tight end. So he was clearly, I think Rem was looking at the defensive line and saying, if I'm not going to be necessarily someone you're leaning on for, X number of snaps per game, maybe I'd be better served. Or you'd be better served using me on the other side. And Bronco said, "No, I want to keep you as a defensive end. I think you're still valuable there." There came a point though where Bronco ultimately conceded the point that we could try him out there. And of course, injury after injury after injury necessitated the consideration. And that said, he's been pretty useful. Five catches, about 13 yards a catch, and a couple balls have sailed that were intended for him. Couple balls have come early that he wasn't quite ready for. So there have been some moments where you realize he's just a few weeks into his tight end transition. But, again, very serviceable and proved that he can throw the ball a bit too on the weekend. So that was kind of a bonus.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think certainly Fresno State didn't see that coming. So flipping to the other side, Matt Wells also talked today about Bronson Cafusi, and I believe called him Goliath. Obviously, Bronson's having a terrific year, a year that a lot of scouts and others are talking about the next level for him. Where do you think Bronson fits in, at least in the Bronco era, as far as the defensive linemen that we've had? There's been a few really, really good ones since Bronco's been the coach, but here Bronson's having a heck of a senior year.
Well, at the defensive end position, BYU hasn't placed too many guys at the next level. Outside linebackers, yes. Safeties, yes. True defensive linemen. Ziggy Ansah was you know and is the one that makes the most noise, and akin to Ziggy, Bronson has the ability to make noise at the next level because he's unusual for his position, unusual either in speed in Ziggy's case or strength and height in Bronson's case. Something has to stand you apart. You know, for Ziggy, it was this incredibly athletic package in a player that was new to the game and the techniques. And with Bronson, it's somebody who's so tall and so good at the line of scrimmage and yet so fast. It's a combination of skills pros will have to look at. What round? I don't know what round he'll go in, and you know, so much of this thing is fit and the style of defense that brings you in. But there's no doubt that if there were any you know concerns about his pro potential after last season, a quiet year for him relatively speaking, those concerns have been resolved. It was 2 or 2.5 years ago that Bronco talked about Alani Fua and Bronson Kafusi as a tandem as being his next two NFL guys. And Alani's already proven that, getting to the NFL with the Cardinals, and I think Bronson's going to be next. I don't think there's any doubt that, that he's got what it takes to get a look at the next level. You make that many plays at this level, at the size he's at. You know, there's a reason that Bronco said the pro attention has picked up considerably this season over last.
Absolutely. He's made some amazing plays and against some high quality opponents as well. One of the things that I think has stuck out as I looked at this as the season is the defense needed to be better than last year. I think we can say statistically they're a little bit better, but maybe not as much as we had hoped and have been kind of up and down. What do you think that defense has to do against Utah State, who's maybe not the strongest offense, but certainly has a few weapons on offense that could cause matchup issues?
Well, I think BYU's been excelling in one particular area, and that's playmaking. They force a good number of turnovers. They find a way to disrupt. The fact that they're one of the top 10 teams in the country in sacks is something that you can't just, you know, brush by. That's a pretty considerable number for BYU. Over the last decade or so, they've been in the top 25 once or twice, but to be top 10 like they are says a lot about this team. And you know, Chucky Keaton has never really, if it is Chucky, it could be Myers, the other guy as well. But if Chucky gets involved, he's never really had games where he goes off against BYU. They found a really successful formula in containing him. And so I think this is a team that BYU feels they have a pretty decent handle on schematically. And I think BYU as a team is making just enough plays to consider itself comfortable in a game like this. Last time BYU was in Logan, I think it was Kyle Van Noy scoring on a pick six in the first minute of the game or so on Utah State's first possession. They've got those kind of playmakers on this roster.
Speaking of other playmakers, Michael Davis this year, when we talked this summer before the season started, you know, one of the concerns was lack of experience at corner, and we had talked about a couple of different players, but he's really kind of stood out to me as folks aren't throwing a lot his way, which is always a good sign for a defensive back. How would you rate the defensive back play so far in the season?
Pretty solid. I like Hanneman's ability to make a play. I think he's been covering really well the last few weeks, and Michael Davis's tackle numbers are down very notably over last year, which is a good sign. That means he's not having to be in that position to make a tackle as fewer people are going his direction, as you've noted. So, yeah, I'm pretty content with it. I think BYU's top 25 nationally in passes picked off. They're breaking up a good number. I think between Hanneman and between Hanneman and Davis, you got two pretty decent corners right there right now. And you know, Davis technically, I think sometimes shows that he's still a work in progress. But again, he's not being victimized as frequently as last year. And Hanneman, I think, is just on sheer athleticism, you know, dissuading a lot of people from going right at him because he's usually step for step and shoulder for shoulder with the guys he's covering.
Yeah. Yeah, much better play than I expected out of those two this year, which is great. Switching gears to basketball, we'll stay in the Kafusi family. I think last year when Corbin was back from his mission and wasn't used a lot at the beginning but got used more and more, I think his first few games I thought, wow, he definitely looks like a looks like a football player playing basketball, but over the, towards the end of the season and then the first few games of this season has been a marked difference. What has made the difference for Corbin from going from what looked a little awkward, certainly super athletic, but just not quite there as a basketball player, to now being what was looks like he'll be a pretty significant contributor, even with a deep deep front court?
Just time to work. You know, he was brought in and had to get into it so quickly. And really, once you get into the season, you're preparing for games. You're not refining your techniques. You're not taking the time that you get in the off season, you know, to work on things that can really evidence themselves in the season to come. I think he simply had the time, the months and months, to work on his own, to work with coaches, and work in with his teammates to becoming the post player that they see him developing into. I mean, again, this was his freshman year last year that began with him intending to play football or thinking about playing football. This is the first true offseason into season that he's been able to think about himself, and his coaches have been able to think about him as a post presence and a post factor. And I think you're just seeing all the work that he's put in. All credit to him. All credit to Corbin Cafusi for getting himself into this position right now, to where he can contribute as one of a number of post players. It doesn't just have to be him as well. So much last year, and this is probably a factor too, so much last year was kind of placed on in his lap. You're the one guy we think has the athleticism and potential to contribute there, but he was still so raw. And it was all on him. Now it's not all on him. He's got a handful of postmates that will take the pressure off him and allow him to develop, I think, at even a greater pace. You know, that said, he's shooting 70% from the field right now, hitting his free throws in the 60s, averaging 12-8. This is a really encouraging start for BYU from Corbin Cafusi.
I think another encouraging start, maybe little high on turnovers, is Kyle Davis has been everything we thought he would be, maybe even more as a, you know, rebounding and scoring presence. Mm-hmm. How would you rate his first few games with the Cougars?
Yeah, you know, the turnover issue notwithstanding, I mean, if he gives you 12-13, if he gives you a double, if he averages a double double for you, you have to say that Kyle Davis is giving you what you hoped he would. He's averaging 5+ turnovers a game right now. Clearly, that has to come into that has to get controlled and get brought in. That's not a sustainable number in the long term. But everything else he's doing for you is just what BYU needs. Again, the free throw number's got to come up. He's under 50% right now, and as many looks as he's going to get, that number has to come up, and that goes for the team as well. BYU is one of the lowest percentage teams right now nationally in free throws at 54. Again, they've got to get a handle on that, become better there, because I think every other element of this offense is either you can see going to be in place or already in place.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things on the outside has been Chase Fisher has started off a little cold, and Nick Emery has been up and down, but for a freshman, certainly you expect that. Few games in, obviously the loss to Long Beach State. How would you rate the team as a whole? Do you think this is kind of what we're going to get, up and down? Do you think they'll get more consistent as we go through the season? Or is it just one of those, with as many new people, we got to wait till 5-10 games into the season to really know how they're going to gel together?
Well, I think you've got to look at different kind of mileposts in the season, and Long Beach State was the first one, and it was not a successful night. That's the first game you kind of think you've got to win. You're going away from home, but it's a high visibility game on ESPN2. I think it was ESPN2 that night. That's your first milepost game. You're expected to win. You should be able to win it, and they were not able to. So then you look at your next milepost games. And that is Belmont Saturday, and then it's Utah the next week, and it's Weber State and Utah State as you go back-to-back-to-back in-state games. Then you're at Colorado, and you're home to Central Michigan, which was a tournament team, I believe, from last year, or at least top 100 RPI from last year. So you've got a half dozen games in a row after Mississippi Valley State that can all be considered benchmark games, milepost games. How do you perform in these? And I think once we get through this 6-game stretch, we'll get a pretty good sense of where this BYU team is going to be.
Yeah, absolutely. This will be a big couple of weeks for them. Well, Greg, thank you for coming on the podcast. Always enjoy hearing your perspective, and we'll have you on again soon.
All right, my pleasure as always. Thank you.
CougarFan.com Rising Shot Podcast. Matt, this week's podcast is sponsored by my upcoming epic fantasy novel, P-Crosser. Did you know that?
I had heard that that might be true.
It's the first in a planned trilogy. To learn more about how you can help crowdfund the novel, go to AdamJMangum.com. Matt, when you read this, because I know you're going to, because you're my brother.
I'm already in.
I know. You have crowdfunded. When you read it, will this be your first epic fantasy novel you've ever read?
Probably.
Probably. You haven't read The Hobbit?
Oh, so if The Hobbit counts, if the Lord of the Rings trilogy counts, I'm in.
Okay,
I've read that.
Of course the Lord of the Rings counts as an epic fantasy.
All right, yeah, I've read that.
Okay, so this will be your... but you're not dipping into this well very often.
No, this is not my regular cup of tea.
Yes. If I say the name Brandon Sanderson, does that mean anything to you?
No.
Okay. Well, then you've proven my point. But we'll move on from fantasy, Matt, which is not, well, fantasy football maybe you'd like to talk about. But
I will talk about fantasy football all day long.
Yes,
right now.
Yes, you will. But we're not going to. I was going to ask you a question about Peyton Manning. Okay. So I'm going to pose you a little hypothetical. All right.
All right. Here we go.
Let's say that Peyton Manning calls you up on the phone and says, Matt.
First of all, this is already a great day.
Yes. It's a great day. And says,
how did
Matt,
he get my number?
Everybody's got your number. And he says, Matt, I'm going to give you a lifetime supply of Papa John's. I'm just kidding. That would actually
Peyton
be cool.
Manning has my number. I love this story.
So he calls you up and he says, Matt, I'm not sure what to do. I'm hurt. Brock Osweiler, whatever his name is out playing me.
I heard he's pretty tall.
He is very tall for a quarterback. I mean, he's looks down on all his offensive linemen, which is
he's
kind
tall
of
for
hilarious.
Anybody. He's like 6'8", isn't he?
Yeah, he's basically a monster. Yeah, he's huge. So anyway, Peyton says, Matt, what should I do? If you were advising Peyton Manning, what would you say? Hanging up at the end of the season? I mean, what should he do? He keeps saying he wants to play next year, but what would you advise him to do, Matt?
Play again. Play some more. Play it out, man. If it's not in Denver, somebody else will sign you up. And sure, I mean, really, if you look at it and people make the Brett Favre comparison and all this, like, oh, a lot of these guys, they play one year past what they can really do. Who cares?
Nobody.
You know, this is this guy's life, and he's one of the greatest of all time. And I may not be I wasn't a big fan of the Colts, all right?
You hate
obviously
the Colts.
When Peyton Manning was there.
You hated Peyton the Manning, Colts.
Yeah, I did. I did. I absolutely did. And to a certain extent, I still do. But but Peyton Manning is one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. And as a fan of the game, I'd love for him to play as long as he's competitive. And, you know, you look at the first few games this season, looked a lot better than the most recent set of games. So I think if he gives him a chance to heal up, he may have another season left in him. If somebody wants to give him that shot and he can earn it, go for it. Keep playing, man.
Yeah,
play it out.
I'm kind of split. I'm with you. You know, Joe Montana goes to the Chiefs. Fran Tarkington, I think, what did he play for the Rams at the end? You know, lots of great quarterbacks end up hanging on a season or two too long. Brett Favre is, as you pointed out, another example. But you said something that I think, especially for you, Matt, very insightful. Shots fired.
I'm just going to let that one sit there for a minute.
It's his
don't
life.
Don't worry, that's coming back. That's coming back to you. Don't worry.
I have no doubt of that. It's his life. If he wants to play another year, knock yourself out. Now, I don't think the Broncos are going to bring him back.
Nope.
I think, like you said, he's probably going to have to do it for someone else. But the quarterback situation in the NFL is not particularly great, so
no.
Someone's going to give him a shot if he wants to do it. Now, if I were him, might I say just the physical pain and all that stuff isn't worth it, and I'm just going to go on to the next phase of my life? Maybe I would. I don't know. But if he wants to come back, I'm with you. More power to him. I think the Broncos, though, have a very tough decision. If Osweiler plays well over the next few weeks, and Peyton had been playing very poorly, granted hurt, I don't know what you do if you're the Broncos to try to figure out, and why do I care about the Broncos? I hate the Broncos, but, you know, You know what I'm saying? It'll be a tough decision for them.
But you know what? If a healthy, listen, a healthy Peyton Manning doesn't do the same things that Brock Osweiler or whatever his name is, right? And I don't know how long Brock's really going to be the solution there in Denver. But a healthy Peyton Manning, I think, is still an above average quarterback in the 2015 NFL. You yes. go and you look, you go into the beginning stretch of their game. You go through week five, okay? And he's averaging above 60% completions.
Right.
You know, and they're winning games.
Right.
You know, they won, they got into week six, week eight. And then it really wasn't until it appears that the injuries had just kind of caught up with him this season that things have really, that the rails really came off, and it happened very quickly. But while he was healthy, that guy's still competitive. Now, he's not chucking the ball down the field, and defenses can adapt for that. And they can, it does give them a little bit that they don't have to defend and those types of things. But he is still one of the greatest of all time. He's just not in his prime. He beats at least half of today's starting quarterbacks in the NFL out for their job.
You know what's crazy to me? Do you know who the number two quarterback in the NFL is according to QB rating, which is a fairly flawed statistic, but we'll use it for this purpose?
Who is that?
Carson Palmer.
Yeah.
And he is playing fantastically this year.
But yeah, I'm fantasy football league. I won't get into it. We won't dwell on this. No. But I'm in a fantasy football league with a bunch of guys at work. And anyway, the night of the draft, some stuff happened. I ended up having an auto draft. I picked up Carson Palmer off the waiver wire.
That's worked out. That's worked
dominating.
Out. Dominating. So, Matt, let's move on from the NFL to our first segment, Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
Which, of course, is brought to you by CougarFan.com, where you can get all of your BYU Cougar sports news. Matt, unfortunately, the women's soccer team lost to Stanford 2-1. They were not able to chop down the terrible tree, and they lost 2-1. But a fantastic season by women's soccer, especially when you take into account that they had some pretty serious injuries. So hats off to the women's soccer team this year for a very fine season. The women's volleyball team wins a share of the WCC title. Alexa Gray leads the way with 19 kills as the 12th-ranked Cougars went past the Dons of San Francisco. Women's basketball loses to Colorado State and Oklahoma. Kind of a rough weekend for the women Lady Hoopsters. Is that really a term I can use, Lady Hoopsters?
I think you can. I'm not even sure you coined that term. I believe I've heard it before.
I believe that is correct. I don't think I'm that original. So
I'm
going
to go ahead and chalk that one up to Dick Vitale.
Yeah.
I'm just going to let him have it.
Yeah, he can have it. I didn't say diaper dandy.
Nope.
So, Matt, let's go to...
Still not really sure what that means.
I think it means they're young, but I have not met a lot of athletic 18-year-old men who wear diapers. But
nope, I'm not. I think I just feel like everybody would know if you were a Division I basketball player still wearing diapers.
I think they would. I think that is likely, especially in the 80s. Maybe a little less likely now with the shorts.
Hello.
Matt, let's talk about Cougars in the pros with the first pick in the NFL draft.
Sit down, you know.
Ziggy Ansah gets his 8th sack of the year on a safety. Well, technically it was a penalty call in the end zone, but they had to hold Ziggy to keep him back. So, well done, Ziggy. He keeps rocking. Pro Bowl?
Ziggy doing the safety dance.
Pro Bowl? Ziggy in the Pro Bowl?
Yeah, I think that might be what we're looking at here. Isn't that crazy?
Yes.
Did you hear that he didn't even know how to put his pads on at one point at BYU?
What?
Did you ever hear about that?
No, I don't believe that's true.
I don't know if you heard that story or not, but
no, it's
it might be apocryphal. I don't know for sure.
Yeah, I have a feeling that in the Thanksgiving Day game with the Lions, there will be a Ziggy didn't play football till a few years ago reference. Right? I set the over under on 1.5 references. To Ziggy's pass, or are you taking the over or the under?
Oh, 1.5? Over. Yeah. That's easy.
That was too easy.
That line's not going to stick.
All right, Matt. So in the agenda, I put Fresno.
Did you really write Frenzo?
I did. Frenzo.
What's wrong with you?
That's a typo. So, Matt, BYU did exactly what they were supposed to do on Saturday. They pounded a bad team. Okay. So what's your top takeaway from Saturday, if anything?
I will tell you this. The early parts of this game did have me nervous.
Oh,
I'm not going to lie
to
you.
Gosh. You and all the rest of the BYU fans, you can't even enjoy a big, huge victory. But you know that the score always starts 0-0. You know that, right?
Oh, my gosh. Here we go. Anyway, but one of the things I do love about this, as weirded out as I was by it, the Remington Peck touchdown pass.
That was fantastic.
And you know, it's kind of, you know, and I feel like this is a comment that you would make, but everybody is all after Anae for being vanilla and all this, and we all wanted him to throw, you know, we had players we wanted him to throw touchdown passes to and all these kinds of things. But you know, this is actually a pretty cool thing for him to call that play and give him a chance to run that. Apparently Anae has a personality.
And he threw a good pass.
Yeah, he did.
That's the thing that I think absolutely floored me was it was a good pass. It was not a bad pass. Matt, you kind of alluded to this. So Devon Blackman does not get a touchdown catch in his last home game of his career. Matt, people on BYU were absolutely just slamming Anae for this. Is it the coach's duty to make sure somebody like Devon Blackman, who's been a very good organizational player for BYU, do they have to get him a touchdown pass? He has been targeted in the red zone this year, but has not gotten in. And quite frankly, it's just kind of stunning that he's got 40 catches this year and doesn't have a touchdown. Were you revved up about this, or do you think that's just sometimes it just doesn't work out?
Sometimes it just doesn't work out. I mean, if you look at the list of people with 40 or 50 receptions and don't have touchdowns, right? I mean, there are some other guys on there that were good career guys, good program guys. I think when you get into a situation in a game, you know, even late in a game, when you start trying to force the ball in the end zone to one guy, I'm going to sound like such a wet towel when I say this, but people get hurt trying to do stuff like that. You know, there's, if it doesn't happen in the flow of the game over the course of a season, you know, then we just didn't get there. And, you know, at the end of the day, I don't think it really, that's not what's going to define, Blackman's career, in my opinion.
No, I agree.
So I think it's okay.
Yeah, I agree. And then there's two more games, Utah State and a bowl game. Matt, my takeaway from Fresno State, the biggest takeaway, was Bronson Kafusi is meaner than you.
Oh, he is a bad man.
He had a great game against Missouri against a SEC offensive line and then continued that terrorizing the Bulldogs. Now, granted, Fresno State is not a particularly stout offensive line, but still 3 sacks, 4 tackles for loss for 20 yards, a pass breakup. I mean,
A blocked field goal.
I thought the Dave McCann did a good job in extolling how awesome he was. Though I have to say, those guys stayed pretty even and talked a lot about Fresno State for a BYU announcing crew. Maybe some of the national announcers could take notes.
How about that Kai Nakua? Speaking of people who are bad men.
Ooh. That return was you can see why that guy was a electric offensive player in high school.
Yeah, he's good.
So Matt, let's go to Utah State is coming up this Saturday. Utah State is maybe not as good as I thought they were going to be when the season started. They do have questions at quarterback. Their quarterback Myers got hurt in their last game against Nevada. Chucky Keaton, who we're all very familiar with, came in for that. Matt, does it make a difference to you whether it's Myers or Keaton playing quarterback on Saturday?
You know, I'm not sure that it does. And I think that either way, these guys are – I think either way you're going to have struggles. It just depends on which type of – I mean, I'm not talking about BYU having struggles. I think if you're Utah State, I think you could struggle with either of these guys. And it just kind of you just kind of have to pick your poison from that perspective. At the same time, we tend to have trouble with Okay, I think historically there are two things in quarterbacks from opposing teams that make me nervous: mobile quarterbacks and young quarterbacks. Those two things make me very nervous. So either way, things could go poorly here for either team. So I'm not sure that I feel like it's a pick 'em.
Yeah, I don't know that it matters. I will share a stat with you. So far this year, Myers has averaged 8.21 yards per pass attempt, and Keaton has not played particularly well when he has played, only 5 yards pass per attempt, which is pretty terrible, actually. Now, granted, he gives you some offense with his legs, but I guess I prefer Keaton at this point. I'm not really that worried about a mobile quarterback just because I think that actually plays into our strength. We've got some speed guys on the front seven, you know, Bronson and Fred Warner and Longy. So I'm not too worried about Chucky Keaton. And he's certainly not an elite runner.
That's billboard material right there. That's what you're giving him.
Yes, yes. But I'm sure the Utah State team is listening intently to the Rise and Shot podcast. Maybe they are.
We should check the stats. Check out downloads and Logan.
Yeah, we should. We should. We'll get back to you on that. So, Matt, the one thing that has me worried about this game is I think Utah State may end up being the third best defense we play this year. Now, I think it's a huge drop off after Michigan and Missouri, so I'm not putting them in that same class. But the offense has been slowed so far this year against better than average defenses. Their offense, though, is not very good. Anything about this matchup worry you? Do you worry about Logan? Do you worry about rivalry? What's in your brain there, buddy?
Those are the two things that really worry me. You know, I think that offensively, I think Utah State's going to struggle against the BYU defense. On paper, I feel good. I feel okay about this matchup. I think it'll be fine. But, and I think we're going to get to this a little bit more in a second, but I do consider this as a rivalry game. And I think that the teams are close enough that that could make a difference. And playing the game in Logan, I think, could also have an impact on this game.
Yeah, I'm not that worried about the Logan aspect of it. I am just worried about, I think the bad matchup for us is this year is good defenses, and particularly good defenses that are well-rounded, meaning they can play the run and the pass well. Yep. So that's my one pause. The Logan factor to me, I'm not too worried about that. So, Matt, it's kind of over-under time. BYU opens as only a three-point favorite, which I thought would be a little higher than that. Are you taking the over or the under of BYU as a three-point favorite?
Oh, I take BYU there.
Yes, I do as well. Let's do some individual over-unders. Tanner, over-under 285 yards passing.
That's tough. I mean, this is a Utah State defense that's averaging only 171 pass yards.
Yes.
Given up to their opponent.
Now, granted, they've also played some terrible passing teams, but yes, they're a good pass defense.
I'm taking the under.
I'm going to take the over, but not by much. Over under 1.5 touchdown passes for Tanner Mangum.
I'm taking the over.
I'm going to take the under. That's interesting. You go over on the TDs and under on the yards. I do the opposite. I'll add one in here. Bronson Kafusi, over under 1.5 sacks.
Over.
I'm going to take the over. I'm going to take the over with you as well. BYU defense, over under 375 total yards allowed.
Under.
I am also going to take the under. So, Matt, it is prediction time. Give us your prediction for Saturday's game.
I think ultimately what happens here is that the BYU defense bottles up whoever the quarterback is and holds this team down. I think maybe late in the game, Utah State will make a run and try and get back in it, but it's just not going to be enough. I think we'll run the ball a little bit better against Utah State than we have against some of other opponents in recent weeks. I see BYU coming out on top here 24-17.
Well, we are pretty close. I think it will be a close game for most of the game. Unlike you, I do not think we will rush well. I think all the offense will rest on the arm of Tanner Mangum and his band of merry men. What do we want to call this group of like five wide receivers?
His band of merry men?
I don't know.
Really?
That's what Robin Hood had.
We get this late in the season and that's when you pull out his band of merry men?
I don't know.
You don't know. Like, that's what are you talking about?
I don't know. Doesn't this his group band of wide receivers need a nickname?
What is this, Robin Hood men in tights? Could they come out here singing and wearing feathers in their caps?
Maybe. Maybe they will.
What are we talking about now?
Maybe they will. I think BYU wins.
Band of merry men.
I think BYU wins this, gets a touchdown late, and wins 24-14. I think the Utah State offense struggles mightily against the BYU defense. So Matt, we have a... shut up. wasn't that bad.
I'm just having some fun with
I've
this.
Said much worse.
Yes, you have.
On Twitter, we've got a question from Chris Murphy. This is at CMurphyPro. It says...
Tweetbag.
Actually, no. I'm getting to his later. I thought we had a different tweetbag question, but it's just my own question. Sorry. No tweetbag. Take that tweetbag back. Is this a rivalry, Matt, between BYU and Utah State? Does this qualify as a rivalry? Now, I realize it's kind of an amorphous term, but under your criteria, does it qualify?
Under my criteria, it does qualify. And there's a couple things that I look at here, right? There's the history. There's those types of things. There's the shenanigans, right? Everybody likes to get into that. But the two schools, the students, and the way the fan bases interact, this is a rivalry. And BYU fans can call Utah State the little brother, do whatever they, you know, all these other kinds of things. But this is a rivalry game. And it's going to be that way for some time. But and I think it always, people, you know, with the wagon wheel and you got the beehive boot that we all pass around and we've all kind of tried to force it. But I feel like in the past several years, this has become a legitimate rivalry.
See, here's the thing for me. On a rivalry, and I'm going to quote Andy Roddick here when he was asked once, and I may have used this quote on the podcast before, but when he was asked once to talk about his rivalry with Roger Federer, and this was years ago when Federer was at his peak as a tennis player, Roddick said, it's not a rivalry if I can never beat him, right? If you look at the last 5 years or so, Utah State has two victories. That's how many they had in like 30 years before that, right? This is now, to me, a rivalry because the quality of the programs is to a point that it's similar. Plus, I mean, we've been playing them since the first game was like, 1922 or something like that? And we've played them with a few little hiatuses there. Is that how you say plural of hiatus? Hiatuses?
I feel like hiatus would just be wrong.
Yeah, it just would be wrong. It has
something to do with whether the word is Greek or Latin. I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Didn't you study linguistics or something?
I may have. Studied a little bit of the linguistics.
So I consider this a rivalry. I asked, did a Twitter poll on this very question, and as of right now, we've got 67% saying yes, 23% no, and then I did leave who question mark as an option, and that was only 10%. So at least of our listeners and followers on Twitter, it seems like a majority. What are you laughing at?
The fact that you had who as an option and got 10% of the vote in there, those are votes for yes, this is a rivalry, in my opinion.
Because that is
the exact type of stuff that I'm talking about that goes on between fan bases and between schools. Because then the message is, you know, you're dusting your shoulders off. Get off me. I don't even know who you are. You peons from Logan. Go back to Logan. You don't even belong with us. That's the message that sends. And when you feel like you have to say that, guess what, folks? You've got a rivalry.
Exactly. This is the difference, and I saw somebody mention this on Twitter in the last day or so. This is the difference between the Utah State rivalry now and the Utah State rivalry when I was at BYU, when it wasn't a rivalry.
Okay? No, even when I was there, wasn't that wagon wheel was locked up in a trophy case in the Merritt Center, never to leave.
Well, and the other,
it came out once a year for them to engrave the score on it.
And the other part of it was, nobody on campus or the fan base didn't talk about Utah State. The Utah State fans talked about BYU, but there wasn't the reciprocity that there is now. I equate this to if you ever go to Laramie back in the days of the Mountain West Conference and WAC, do you know who they always said Wyoming was their biggest rival? Was us. The Wyoming fans, it was BYU. BYU fans didn't even think about Wyoming or their fan base ever. So it was not a rivalry. A rivalry has to be both ways. And to your point, once we put up on the scoreboard, and that kid I think got fired, you know, about the little brother.
But that kid's a hero.
But he is a hero. That means it's a rivalry. Because if you had done that about Wyoming, nobody cares.
No, right? And you wouldn't have even gotten fired. They'd have been like, come on, dude. It's Wyoming.
It's Wyoming. What are you doing? So I agree. Is it our biggest rivalry? No. There's much more history with Utah. And I don't think it's our biggest rivalry, but it's certainly a rivalry.
And I don't know why everybody fights this. Why do we fight this, right? It's okay to have more than one real rivalry. It's okay.
A lot of teams do.
Yeah, and that's what makes this fun. We want it to be competitive for a little while, and then we want to smoke them every year after that. That's the way this should work.
Yes. Yes, I agree. I agree. I have no problem with it being a rivalry. I know some of the older fans are like, Utah State. They're a quality program now. They just are. They're not a great program, but they have done a very good job over the last 5 or 6 years, and it's just kind of silly to not recognize it, right? I mean, give them a hard time, call them the little brother, but
yes.
But when you're talking seriously, if you don't think they're a decent program now, you just got your head in the sand, right?
And it's fun because it bleeds across multiple sports. You know, you get into hoops and you got it there, and it's just fun. This is what makes college sports fun.
Agreed. So, Matt, let's move on to the rest of the season after Utah State, which is basically the bowl game. Our friend of the podcast, Jay Drew, writes in the Trib about what might happen as far as the Hawaii Bowl or the Las Vegas Bowl. Are we all agreed that we want to play in the Vegas Bowl?
Yes.
Rather play a Pac-12 team for more money, right?
Yeah, it's a no-brainer, right? It's a math question.
Yes, it's straightforward. And on top of that, hopefully, Jerem Jordan said this to me, so I'm quoting Jerem off the podcast. He was on last week, but this was when he and I were just chatting before after recording, that 2019, when the next game gets swapped, hopefully we're in a conference by then.
So, and then the Hawaii Bowl's off the table.
Yes. So yes, we're all in. Vegas Bowl or nothing. And I think the Las Vegas Bowl would pick us over the alternatives just because of we could help them put butts in the seats.
Yes.
So now I'm going to actually talk about the tweet bag, Matt.
Tweet bag.
So this is Chris Murphy at C Murphy Pro on Twitter, asks, if Anai were to leave to be head coach in Hawaii, who are potential replacements? Would Bronco consider Sark or promote Beck? Matt, percent chance Robert Anai is named the next head football coach for the University of Hawaii?
12.
I was going to say 10, so we're in the same ballpark, you and I. If he were to leave, either for that or some other position or job, percent chance Steve Sarkisian becomes the offensive coordinator.
Can I put a negative percentage on
you
this?
You cannot.
That's never, ever, ever going to happen.
Not after what just happened this year.
I love Steve Sarkisian. He's one of my favorite BYU football players of all time. I think he's a great football mind. I think when he was a player, one of his strongest attributes is it was like having another coach in the huddle. And I've said that many times. Steve Sarkisian has found himself in a little bit of a spot right now. I don't see BYU being in a position where they would hire him as an offensive coordinator. First of all, I don't think he's going to take the job next year, even if they were to offer it to him. But I don't see that door opening up for him.
Right. No, I agree with you.
I wish him all the best. I want him to get healthy, and I want him to get all that taken care of. But I don't think BYU is going to be in a place where that's going to happen.
Contrary to what I think a lot of BYU fans want, I think the head coach next year is Bronco Mendenhall, and the offensive coordinator is Robert Anai.
Now, who was the other option that was mentioned in the tweet there?
Beck, and I believe he's saying Jason Beck, the current quarterback's coach.
Now that's interesting. I don't think Anaya is going anywhere, but that one's interesting to me.
I don't think they do that again.
I don't think they do, but that it's an interesting idea, right? I think that what we learned from the Doman experiment is, and to a certain extent with Nick Howell last year, this is not a program for somebody to cut their teeth as a coordinator. If Doman or Beck or Howell or any of these guys want to become a coordinator at BYU or a similar program, I think they've got to go and have a coordinator job at a program in a different tier first. And I think as a fan base, that's what we should want and that's what we should expect as far as coaching staff hires and decisions are concerned.
Well, I mean, at least maybe some more experience beyond BYU. Certainly, I think having play calling duties before would be a good thing.
At the very least, but I really believe they've got to have been a coordinator somewhere before we should even think about it.
Yeah. So Matt, so far this year, almost every week we've done one up, one down, which is picking a team that you think, one team that impressed you on their way to a potential bid in the college football playoff, and one team that may be falling out of favor for you. So let's start with your one down.
My one down.
Yes.
My one down's Ohio State.
Ohio State losing to Michigan State. So percent chance they're in the college football playoff?
Zero.
You think it's zero?
They're done.
No. I think there's a scenario where it happens.
I think the odds of that scenario playing out are just very, very slim.
Yeah,
I mean, Clemson, true. I mean, what do you need, right? So Michigan State, let's just say we get Michigan State in from the Big Ten and Iowa loses a game.
Yes, so Iowa loses to Nebraska.
Okay. Now, so then maybe, Iowa loses to Nebraska. So then we got Michigan State, Nebraska, Michigan State wins.
Nebraska can't get into the championship. It would still be Iowa in the championship. So you'd have a one-loss Iowa and a Michigan State. Iowa beats Michigan State.
Oh, that's now – okay, so this is a scenario where Ohio State maybe gets in.
Yes. I still think,
okay,
to your point, it's very – what I think happens in that scenario is no Big Ten team gets in the playoff is what I think happens in that scenario.
See, but I feel like that's very unlikely.
I think
Michigan State beats Iowa. Michigan State gets in.
Yes, yes, I agree. They're in the spot right now to get.
But Iowa goes into that game undefeated.
Well, actually, I don't know if Michigan State beats. I'm not sure if that's true. But my one down this week was Oklahoma State, who is gaining some traction as a potential dark horse candidate, and of course, their loss to Baylor knocks them out of it. Who's your one up?
This is going to sound crazy, but as far as teams I think improved their chances, whether I would put them there or not, Oklahoma. It was a close win over TCU, but following that up after the win over Baylor, I think Oklahoma has set themselves up to get in there, but they're going to have to get through Oklahoma State to do it.
Yes, I think they have set themselves up as well. The team that really, I think, was the one up for me is Michigan State. I mean, by beating Ohio State, they have opened up a path into the college football playoff. They might win two more games, Penn State and the Big 12 and the Big 10 championship, and still not get in, depending on who else plays well between now and the end. But they had to beat Ohio State to have a shot, right? That was yep. That was a win. As a two-loss team, they were out. Now they've got a shot. I'm with you. Oklahoma, they may be riding. They may basically have one of those spots filled out before the conference championships are played. Now, Oklahoma's not a lock either if they beat Oklahoma State. There's still, Notre Dame and with their game against Stanford. And, of course, Iowa is this dark horse out there. None of us think they're going to get there because they're going to get beat by Michigan State in the championship. But you never know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you do never know. But I think that if the only undefeated team left is Clemson, I think Oklahoma gets into that top four.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. So, Matt, we're not going to talk a lot about basketball. They beat Adams State, la-di-da. We're really going to find out what they're made of here this next weekend. So we will talk a lot about basketball next weekend. They got Mississippi Valley State, not a particularly good team, but Belmont is a quality team. And so by the time we have our podcast next week, I think we'll have something more to talk about. So, Matt, I'm
jumping. Yeah, we'll have a little preview for the Utah game. That'll be fun. Are we rivals with Utah? Are we going to have that conversation next week?
I don't believe I've not heard of who's Utah? University of Utah, or is it Utah University?
I can't remember.
I can't remember.
I get either. Them confused with Miami for some reason.
So Matt, here's another tweet bag for us.
Tweet bag.
This is from Pat. I would call her a super fan at Crazy Coug Fanatic on Twitter. She asks us, I thought you might revisit the answering machine game. She says for our 500th episode, but it was just our fifth anniversary. We're not quite to 500. This is 210. Any chance that it shows up tonight? Well, for you, Pat, the answering machine is back.
Yeah, odds are 100%. Forecast of answering machine.
That's right. That's right. Now, this is how this works. I will explain it in such a confusing way that if you've not heard the game before, you'll have no idea after my explanation what we're actually going to do, and then we will do it. So
this sounds about right. Go ahead with your terrible explanation.
So this is how it works. One of us will call the other of us and pretend to be the answering machine for somebody involved in BYU athletics, and then we will reverse it.
Did you practice this? Did you write out that explanation beforehand? Because that is truly awful.
I did. I did practice it. I was trying to see if I could even go to a new level of confusing.
You got there.
So, Matt, do you want to go first, which means I will call you?
I still don't know what that means, if I go first. Am I calling you, or are you calling me?
I will ring, and you will be the answering machine message.
Okay, I will go first, if that is the scenario you just described.
All right, here we go. Ring, ring.
You've reached the voicemail of Robert and I might be out interviewing for head coaching jobs. I might not. I might be drawing up plays for Remington Peck to throw another touchdown pass. I guess you're just going to have to guess. Leave me a message, and I probably won't call you back because that's how I roll. Beep.
Number one, Doctor and I am impressed by your fire dancing skills. I still have been blown away by that video from, I believe it was before the season started. But what I really want to talk to you about, Dr. Anai, is I know a lot of BYU fans think you're a terrible offensive coordinator. And I want to say you're not. I think you're an average offensive coordinator, maybe a little bit above average. And, you know, sometimes we got to hang our hat on that. And also, if you really could get, you may not have heard this, but some BYU fans would really like Blackman to get a touchdown. If you could try to, you know, get a play, you know, maybe like a little sweep or something for him to get in, that would be great. Otherwise, good luck this week against Utah State, and don't take the head coaching job at Hawaii. It's not as cool as it sounds. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Do you take the head coaching job at Hawaii? I mean,
no.
That's not a good job.
You're not even going to have a program in 5 years. No, you don't take the head coaching job at Hawaii. I mean, No, you don't do that. The offensive coordinator job at BYU is a better gig. Now, if you're just desperate to become a head coach, fine, you know. But you know, you're not set up to succeed in Hawaii.
Nope.
I mean, every game is a huge travel road game, right? Oh. And they've had a few decent stretches over time, but it's just really hard to sustain success in Hawaii. All right, Matt, your turn.
Boop, 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 boop. Ring, ring.
Hello, you've reached the voicemail of Remington Peck, the new star tight end for the BYU Cougars. I'm out practicing my, touchdown passes, both throwing and receiving, so I can't get to the phone right now. Leave me a message, and I'll get back to you as soon as my now very busy schedule allows. Beep.
Remington, my man. there were stretches of the Missouri game where I could not stop talking about the fact that just weeks previously you had been a defensive lineman. It was a great fact to point out. Unfortunately, there was a point in the game where I had to stop talking about it because it just got embarrassing to be bragging about anything there towards the end. But my point is that was awesome. Okay, that you were bringing new definition to the term. I mean this in a loving way. Fat guy touchdowns. Okay, now the touchdown pass, and you're not like that big, right? But you're a lineman size. But the touchdown pass, that is unbelievable. The way you set back for that thing, the form looked great, and just boop, dropped it right in there for six. Unbelievable. Giving hope to linemen everywhere. All right, that's what you did, my friend. That's what you did, and I love you for it.
That's did you it. Just tell Remington Peck that you loved him?
I did. And let's be honest, I've had conversations, maybe I don't know if we ever talked about this on the podcast, but I've been fairly unimpressed with Remington Peck up until the last few weeks.
Well, here's the thing. You alluded to this in your fake message, but we were talking with the Missouri fans behind us at the game because they were like, why is that guy so wide open? And when we told the story that, you know, he coming into this year, he was a defensive lineman, they were floored. So, Matt, before we round out, I saw this on Cougar Board, which, of course, I know. Friends don't let friends go on Cougar Board. But I saw this on Cougar Board. Do you think this is an indictment of the coaching staff that Peck has turned into a decent tight end option in the season? Like they missed something over his career? Or do you think this is just one of those things?
I feel like it's maybe just one of those things, but at the same time, I mean, an indictment I feel like is a little bit kind of strong language.
Okay.
But at the same time, haven't we been searching for a tight end for like years?
Yes. Yes.
Don't you think you'd get to a point where you'd be like, hey, whoever thought about playing tight end in high school, why don't you come out here and run a couple patterns and we're going to have somebody throw it to you and see how you look. We got plenty of scrimmages to mess around with this stuff. I mean, they did the whole thing where they brought in the Bash brothers and all this, and they never really did anything with them this year.
Well, they got hurt.
Well, right. So, but don't you think, like, in while you're going through all of that, and you're clearly looking for a tight end, the guys get hurt, you're trying to backfill the next guy up, but we don't really have a next guy because we really didn't actually technically have a first guy. At some point, you got to go looking for it. He wasn't ever going to really play much where he was. I mean, indictment, I feel like, is strong language, but I feel like we should have picked up on this one sooner. Or maybe it took him time to develop. I mean, that's the flip side, right? I mean, that's always a possibility, I guess.
I mean, at some point, a lot of guys come in having played two ways in high school. At some point, you as a program point them in one direction, right? Longy at...
Is that a pop music reference just now?
Not on purpose, but if it was on accident, great.
Listen, I just wanted to make sure. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I have no idea what you're talking
about. Have you even heard of One Direction?
I've vaguely, but I'm almost 40 years old. So anyway, like Longy as a linebacker, you know what I mean? Like you as a coaching staff, you have to make a decision. Is he going to be more valuable to this program? And where's our depth and where's our needs? Linebacker or running back, and they decided that with him. Peck, they decided defensive line, right? I always thought he was short for a defensive lineman, but he's short for a tight end, you know? So I'm not going to say indictment. I just don't think coaching is and making those decisions is as easy as fans make it out to be. Like, oh gosh, I would have known Remington Peck. Nobody before this season, I didn't see a single post on Cougar Board or anywhere else that, you know, the solution to our tight end problem could be Remington Peck. And if somebody out there did say that on Twitter or Cougar Board, feel free to send it to me. And
if Bo Hodge gets hurt, we'll put him in at quarterback.
Right, exactly. So anyway, well, Matt, this has been a podcast, our 210th
yes,
of it. Reminder that this week's podcast is sponsored by my upcoming fantasy novel, Peak Crosser. To learn more about how you can help crowdfund the novel, go to adamjmannigham.com. Matt, next week we will be back to talk about the Utah State game, going bowling, and of course a lot about the basketball team. Thanks everybody for downloading. Thanks everybody for listening, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!